Kelly Lynch, welcome.
It's so nice to see you, Julia.
Now, you've taken up your father's passion for and work on the story of The Untouchables. Before we discuss the iconic role that whole saga, fact, and fiction played in 20th century pop culture, what drove you Lynches to get consumed by it?
I think both my dad and I, many years apart, were captivated by this television show that was unlike anything we had ever seen before. He, when he was a teenager, and I growing up watching the show with my dad 30 years after it had been first produced and first aired. So much of his passions, the railroads, the arts, films, got passed on to me genetically. Okay. So I had no choice.
Nature, nurture, everything.
Absolutely.
And so Prohibition, gangsters, G-Men, that slice of roaring 20s is what drove television's tentative years exactly in 1960. Why that? Why then?
So Desi Arnaz and Lucille Ball were fresh off the success of I Love Lucy. They just sold I Love Lucy to CBS for syndication for reruns. They had just purchased RKO Studios, and they were sort of an upstart in the television industry. They were the Netflix of their day. So they were seeking out properties that they could really build their industry on. And The Untouchables happened to be one of the first things that they had any success with at all in 1959.
And boy, did they. So, unearthing your dad's manuscript, you were aware of it. Were you aware of the scope?
Yeah, I had grown up watching my dad put this together. There was a giant box of research materials in the basement that was always overflowing. And I remember in 1993 when he took a trip out by train to Los Angeles to interview some of the surviving actors, writers, producers, directors, and knew that this project was something he was actively still pursuing in the mid-90s. And somewhere along the way, there was concerns about trademark. Paramount wanted The Untouchables to be more associated with the 1987 movie and a later television show that came out in the early 90s. So my dad sort of just tabled it, but the love and joy for the series continued. And even in college, I was collecting scripts and 16mm prints of the show to just continue that love of this program.
You really had it bad.
I did, yeah. I grew up on a diet of Indiana Jones, James Bond, and Elliot Ness. So I learned how to dress from James Bond. I learned how to enter a room like Elliot Ness.
So meanwhile, your dad's basic medium was a written word. What are you adding to this incarnation that you've picked up and are carrying along on the storytelling now that you're the one telling it?
So my dad put together a really comprehensive 400-page accounting of the show's life, death, and rediscovery and its cultural impact. And he never quite finished it because of his stroke and then him passing away several years later. So what I've been able to do is sort of dust off what was completed and try to bring it into the 21st century in the way that I know how, and to basically release chapters of the book in sequence historically with the television show 60 years later, because it celebrates its 60th anniversary this year. I'm releasing chapters and episode reviews sequentially with how they would have happened 60 years ago. So every Tuesday and then every Thursday for at least the foreseeable next 2 or 3 years, I will be releasing material that is concurrent with what historically appeared on television and then in TV Guide, et cetera, to sort of tell the story that way and celebrate it that way. As an artist, the podcasting medium is very strange and new to me. Usually I'm trying to hide behind my work as a filmmaker, as a consultant. So there's a dedicated website where chapters of the book will be released. I'm conducting interviews with surviving participants, really going in depth into my dad's work in a way that celebrates the show the best that I can. He was a great writer. His voice is so funny. It's so passionate, so detailed. And he has this really great first-person narrative, historical, nonfiction way of accounting the show. He doesn't quite quote people, but he puts you in the mindset of Desi Arnaz, who 24 hours before they shot the first part of this television series didn't have a star. And so he puts you in the mindset of Desi Arnaz chain-smoking his cigarettes and desperately trying to figure out like how they're going to make this thing work, which is really beautiful. It just shows like the level of detail and passion and insight he had just based on his research and materials. So I'm just trying to kind of complement and finish his work where I can and add in my voice. But just about everything you see on the site, I'd say 80% is my dad's work, and then I'm trying to fill in the blanks.
Well, I think that you're very modest in that mathematical equation. You didn't say you were a mathematician, so I've got that. But honestly, Kelly, are you comfortable with all of the mediums that you're embracing and going forward with this? Are you liking it?
Yeah, it's fantastic. I'm applying that never apply critique to somebody's work that you wouldn't apply to your own. So I'm treating this as if I were my own client, and I want it to be the best that it can be. You know, the first episode of the podcast lived in my brain for 6 months, and then in 2 days I made it. And it's like there's still a part where I get choked up and where I know my dad would be proud and be excited to hear what's there and how I've put it all together.
You bring up a good point. A lot of this has been incubating fair and square within you, in your heart, your soul, your brain, every part of you. Are you feeling like when it's ready, it's coming out? And it sounds like you're happy with the form.
Yeah, I have a content strategy just like I would make for a client or at Sweetwater for the next couple months, next couple years. And thankfully, my dad's work is the backbone of that. But I've interviewed actors, historians, people that lived in the town that Elliot Ness lived in when he passed away. So I'm kind of pulling together all of these things at once to celebrate the TV show, talk about it, impacted its legacy, and then also the true stories behind it as well.
And you are collecting all those parts of that legacy and, well, encapsulating, recreating, developing it, then making its own legacy for future generations. Is
yeah,
that what it feels
this
like?
This is a very obscure time in television history. It's a very obscure show. You know, there are so many podcasts and websites dedicated to like Star Wars, and I could talk about Star Wars all day long, but I can really talk about The Untouchables. And this is just a way to point out that the films and TV shows that we love today, like The Sopranos, Boardwalk Empire, Peaky Blinders, even the Godfather series, were influenced by The Untouchables in some way, shape, or form. The creator of The Sopranos has said that growing up watching The Untouchables is what really got him set on this genre. So it's really interesting as a filmmaker, as a film theorist, as an artist to kind of reach back through history and see these dots being connected and to celebrate this show in the way that we would celebrate or recognize Mad Men or Buffy or Game of Thrones, mm-hmm. because this show was such a culture shock for its time before television was a really powerful medium. So this is one of those first big bangs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And a word on those techniques that Desilu used in the production of the show, the high points of black and white film was all right there, the camera work, the music. How important was this at the time for solidifying the success of television, but even for now, the legacy it's given us?
TV was like glorified theater, musical theater, Broadway theater at that time. Sitcoms were just starting to take root. So there wasn't a lot of serious fare on television. I like to say that TV was a safe space in the early 1960s. So The Untouchables came along and really matured the medium. It showed gravitas. It took the high production value of feature filmmaking and condensed it into a television show, which was a huge credit to Desi Arnaz. One of the Desilu historians I spoke to said that Desi had great taste and understood what it took to pull off a really fantastic production. And when they decided to take The Untouchables to series, they were like, we're going to be making a feature film every week for the next foreseeable forever.
That's a fair way to say it. And the standards that it set, the bars that it raised, are some of those still in place?
Absolutely. The Untouchables changed the landscape so much that it freed up a lot of conventions at that time. The Untouchables was sort of like pre-code film in the 20s and 30s, where it was risky, it was expensive, it didn't always succeed. It was a springboard for so many artists, Robert Redford, Cloris Leachman, Elizabeth Montgomery, Peter Falk. This was a springboard for so many creative talents that years later would go on to win Emmys and Oscars and flourish in the industry. So The Untouchables was sort of the proving ground for a lot of these talents in the early 1960s.
And what about the pure shock factor, the gritty stories, lots of TV violence, of course, a historical fact, but a TV first?
Yeah, something that gets overlooked, I think, in the discussion of violence. And it was so severe that there was even a psychologist that wrote an article for TV Guide talking about how Americans were sadists and that if you liked The Untouchables, something was wrong with you, which is fascinating. But the show didn't pull any punches, literally. It didn't linger. It didn't throw morality in your face. It showed you bad guys and it showed you good guys. And it moved on. And the pacing, the fact that the audience could barely catch their breath between scenes was part of the allure because television was very sleepy at that time. It moved at a very lazy, lassie-type pace, so to speak. So to have men and women being machine gunned in the first 5 seconds of your show and Elliot Ness bursting through a brewery door in the next 10 minutes, and then by the end of the episode, he's got his man or he doesn't. The show was sort of a roller coaster for people. And if you can imagine parents thinking about their kids being exposed to this level of violence in their homes or the mafia or gangsters or strippers or anything, there are a lot of people that were horrified and were outraged that this filth was on TV. And it's part of what Newton Minow called the vast wasteland of television, because the corrupting influence of television was perhaps overplayed at that time, but The Untouchables certainly was what really sparked that conversation.
It was shocking and violent. Sopranos shocking, maybe. Can you compare the two?
I feel like the big difference between The Untouchables and The Sopranos is that The Untouchables showed the presence of evil and how good pursued evil doggedly. And good was good and bad was bad. And The Sopranos, you had a lot of bad people doing bad things and levels of gray. And even Robert Stack said that a movie like The Godfather was very dangerous because there was nobody to root for. And if you had someone to root for, they were the bad guy. And it's interesting to sort of get in Stack's brain as you start to unpack his characterization of Elliot Ness, because Elliot Ness personified the entire federal government, and it personified this white knight, so to speak, of what was good and what was pure, and did it unflinchingly, and did it without being moralistic, did it without holding his nose. I mean, he was just as tough as the bad guys. So I think the primary difference between the two is that, you know, you've got good guys in The Untouchables and not too many good guys in The Sopranos. So do you root for Tony Soprano? But I think people, they like to live vicariously through them. There's a part of me that lives to live vicariously through Elliot Ness because he's so good and so awesome, and his persona, his characterization is so intricate and nuanced. That was actually one of Robert Stack's concerns with taking the role, is there wasn't a lot there as an actor to chew on, and he decided to be reactive. Here's all these colorful gangsters and character actors coming in and chewing up the scenery, and he took a composite of the three bravest men he ever met, including Audie Murphy, and created this character of Elliot Ness. And even Mrs. Elliot Ness, the real Elliot Ness, said that it was very much like the real person personified. So that's kind of interesting. It's good to have heroes, right?
It is. You're right. And those of us that grew up with The Untouchables can relate to its place in history, television history, pop culture history, all kinds of history. But what kind of response are you getting from the younger generations that didn't grow up with part of this?
It's really rewarding for friends of mine to say that they didn't know, that they didn't understand what Lucy and Desi did after I Love Lucy. They didn't know that the precursor to The Godfather and Bonnie and Clyde and The Sopranos was this modest little television show in the 1960s. So it's been really satisfying to have my friends and other people discover it, because it is so obscure and unknown. And a lot of people remember Robert Stack from Unsolved Mysteries, but they have no comprehension of him as Elliot Ness. And then it's been rewarding to talk to historians and people that knew Lucille Ball and that interviewed Desi Arnaz and that are familiar with that era, for them to say, like, nobody's ever taken a deep dive on the show or celebrated it in this way. There's been two books that are informative. They're a little too academic, I think. They don't really get into the spirit of the show like my dad does. So it's still been satisfying on either end, especially to have people come up and say, wow, the show's really getting its due. And of course, being the 60th anniversary this year was my excuse to dust off all of my dad's work and say, all right, it's time to do this as a creative project, as a personal project, but as a professional one too, as an artist that can appreciate the medium.
And timing is everything, and wonderful timing for that, Kelly, to be sure. So this journey, I am kind of curious, when you took up that manuscript and the torch, you already had the love in your heart, but you took all this up from your dad. Did you ever dream you'd be this hooked and be doing all of this?
No, it's sort of the burden of our passions. It's just like with trains and railroading and historic preservation. I would have never guessed as a filmmaker in college that I would know so much about economic development or historic preservation or placemaking. It's the same with The Untouchables, and it's been really rewarding to apply all of my knowledge and appreciation for the medium and look back on the show, because the show is what got me hooked on film and television to begin with. So it's nice to have this corner of pop culture history that really nobody else is doing a deep dive on, for good reason. I mean, it's 60 years old. It didn't have the legs that I Love Lucy did, but it did play a very important and very brief role. One historian described it more as a phenomenon than a television show, and I think that's a really accurate way to describe it, especially now that television shows, they've been really elevated in our public consciousness because we have Netflix and Amazon. You know, Newt Minow decried the lack of the shared national experience in watching a show together as a country. Well, now we're able to do it, but in like a new level in the digital age, which is really cool. It's really satisfying to be able to put my dad's name and my name in the footnotes of history on the show, and to be able to talk to actors like Nehemiah Persoff and Patricia Crowley, and to be one or two degrees removed from this incredible era and these incredible artists and this TV show that I know like the back of my hand. So it's been really kind of magical to do that for a variety of reasons.
Fort Wayne creative Kelly Lynch is historian and producer of The Untouchables Retrospective. Kelly, thank you so much for sharing your story of this iconic story with us. Carry that gift.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
That was an arts and culture interview by WBOI's Julia Meek. You can find more of Julia's arts-driven reporting at WBOI.org and on the WBOI Facebook page.